Welcome to Michael's Green World, a podcast exploring people, their innovative ideas, and groundbreaking solutions that can truly make our world better, one step at a time. We focus on solutions that are ecologically sound and also function effectively in the real world. For this, we speak with guests from various countries, industries, and diverse backgrounds. At its core, it's about competitive sustainability. So, we are interested in how change truly succeeds. Through better systems, through smarter resource flows, through innovations that are also economically viable, and through people and institutions who try out new solutions, develop them further, and put them into practice. Many applications that previously relied on oil or gas as their primary energy source are now being electrified in areas like heating, mobility, and industrial processes. This is primarily due to a simple reason. Many applications can be operated much more efficiently with electricity than with the direct combustion of fossil energy sources. At the same time, electricity can be generated from various sources, including renewables and locally. Oil and gas, however, are finite and only available in specific locations. Anyone dependent on them will always remain reliant on resources that are extracted elsewhere and must be brought to us from there. And that is precisely what makes electricity, in the long term, a key to greater independence. And with that, we now turn our attention to Tobias Andriss and EBL, a very important energy provider located in the canton of Basel-Land in Switzerland. Because as electricity grows ever more crucial for heating, mobility, and numerous other applications, the question then becomes all the more pertinent: how the underlying system can be maintained stably and reliably. My guest is Tobias Andriss, CEO of EBL in Liestal in the canton of Basel-Landschaft. He is grappling with a crucial question that has become absolutely central for the entire energy transition. How can one maintain the stability of an electricity grid when generation, consumption, and the feeding back of power are becoming progressively more decentralized and no longer proceed in a synchronized manner? Tobias, would you please briefly tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Right. You mentioned the CEO of EBL, Tobias Andriss. I've already been with EBL for 17 years and for 20 years within this particular industry. I originally trained as an electromechanic by trade, and it was there I also learned precisely how to build transformers. But then I found my way into a completely different industry, into asset management, specifically financial asset management, and then returned to the energy supply sector. And I must say that little detour was good in hindsight, but the energy industry, that is truly the subject where I feel both fascination and great enthusiasm.
That's very interesting. Well, I've personally invested quite a lot at my own home, specifically in the roof and solar panels and a battery and the entire control system, and I've always considered that to be a significant part of my personal asset management strategy. That means I told myself, okay, if I can pay the electricity bill in advance, essentially generate my own power, then it will pay off over many, many years and the money will come back. And so to a certain extent, I have always envisioned this as a very safe and conservative component of my financial planning for my retirement. And the calculation certainly works out. That is actually a significant part of my overall investment strategy, and that naturally helps to generate income by significantly reducing our operational costs. But I believe you are now more focused on the side of electricity production, in the sense that we aim to provide power for our users with a very high degree of reliability. And you're encountering challenges that are currently emerging. What's occupying your mind the most right now?
Yes, I would say that at the moment, there are quite a few significant challenges affecting our industry. On the one hand, we are experiencing some truly extreme technological shifts and developments. For instance, if we talk about photovoltaics, the prices have dropped quite massively, and its expansion is now actively happening everywhere, both on a small and a very large scale. Yes, battery storage systems now coming into play are also seeing extremely rapid cost reduction. Customers now want PV systems and battery storage on a small scale, but these are also being built on a large scale. What that means is our networks, and this is certainly one of EBL's most important core businesses, which have been carefully built up over many decades in an extremely stable operational environment, are now actually confronted with significant new dynamics, both on the customer side and on the technology side, but also quite generally how the system functions and changes in its mode of operation, which we have never ever seen before. And for our energy providers, this is of course a challenge. This means that we essentially need to adapt an infrastructural asset, which typically evolves at a slow pace, much more rapidly than is customary to meet these new demands. And that is one of the greatest challenges that we face.
Yes, I can understand that. That's probably a human challenge as well. So as a CEO, it's also about bringing people along and empowering them on this journey. Do you see any particular opportunities or specific challenges there?
Well, I believe that, in my opinion, this is less of a significant challenge, because I think most of the people who work with us understand that this energy transition is firstly meaningful because it is truly needed. So we still live largely from very finite resources, which also have a certain climate impact. And people and employees understand that this is something that must and will change over time, and that one can essentially be part of this this change that is, I think, motivating for most people. So I don't have to motivate people and tell them, hey, we need to connect these PV systems, or we need to tear up these streets to lay thicker cables or whatever. Instead, I believe there's a motivation there because there's also a very great sense of purpose behind it. So this transformation of the entire energy system, but also more generally the provision of energy to a whole society, is in itself already tremendously valuable. And I believe that really motivates a lot of our staff.
But it's such a wonderful feeling when you have a team of employees and are given the opportunity to lead a company where the overall purpose...
That's one of the most beautiful things there is. I'd say so too, yeah.
Yes, and the culture virtually becomes dynamic now, driven by its own inherent meaning. That's actually quite a wonderful state of affairs.
Well, our culture, you know, I think it has always been quite dynamic in the recent decades. And we were actually one of the players who quite early on naturally focused on this sustainable energy supply. That means for us, this is nothing new. But of course, now the challenge has suddenly grown significantly. So the speed of change is enormously greater. And I personally believe it will be even more so in the coming years. For people who like to work somewhere where things change, where you can create and build new things, that is truly great and inherently motivating.
Is this an advertisement for the younger generation to get involved now?
It's an absolutely fantastic subject on so many different levels across various fields of expertise. So everywhere we face challenges, and these certainly won't diminish in the next few years. So there's plenty of work to be done, and challenges too. You can certainly apply here.
But actually, at least from an outside perspective, it does change the meaning of what you do a little bit. As consumers, you just see a power generator as a power generator. But actually, you must maintain, protect, and further develop the system. And, at least in the public's perception, there has certainly been a significant change, namely from being a power producer to the one who is responsible for ensuring the system's stability.
Yes, I believe that from the outside, we are probably still seen in a somewhat traditional light, because electricity is simply taken for granted. We hold a monopoly in the grid sector as well as in basic supply. That's always viewed with a certain degree of scrutiny. So therefore, I do believe that's already changing. And most importantly, what the customer ultimately receives as a service is still absolutely great. So it's, even though the challenges are quite significant for us, what the customer perceives is always this. He feels nothing, sees nothing, and has no problems at all. And then, of course, the public's perception will probably not be significantly altered by this. If we were to have a different situation now, for instance, one with frequent power interruptions, then the public's perception of our work would likely turn very strongly negative. And at best, if we could then manage to fix it again or get it back on track, then perhaps a different understanding would be present. However, our efforts, they are almost always considered to be self-evident. Therefore, and from that point of view, I think that most people likely don't give it much thought. Naturally, some specialists and insiders who are heavily engaged with this subject, they understand what is going on. But whether the big picture has now lifted us to another podium position, I still don't think so.
Yes, I understand what you're explaining. You have something there that is practically invisible.
Exactly. Our product is good when the customer doesn't feel, see or notice anything about it. And as long as the price is acceptable for them, then we are actually doing a good job. And it's like this. So what is an energy provider? We have various roles in this whole process. One aspect is truly to provide the infrastructure, meaning the grid, in such a way that the electricity can always flow without any interruption, no matter what customers do or want, whether they feed in or draw power. On the other hand, we are naturally also an energy producer, and that is a completely different role. What this essentially means is that we have quite diverse responsibilities within this entire system.
Yes, is it always just electricity that you're providing, or do you also sell heat?
No, we've naturally had for a long time, for 30 years now, a heating business that has grown quite well. So throughout all of Switzerland, we operate around 51 heating networks. These are actually all based on renewable energy sources from the very beginning. That means either wood or waste heat from bodies of water, waste heat from water treatment facilities and so on. This is a relatively large business where already around 50 employees are actively involved today. So we supply Liestal and its surrounding areas, as well as several heating networks here in the region. But also Samenstadt, for example, is heated by us, and Interlaken is also supplied by us.
Does that mean you also operate beyond your region?
In this region, we are active, I would say, from northwest Switzerland down to Romandy in the central plateau, and also in the Lucerne areas. And we have gradually built up our portfolio there over the decades.
Yes, that also helps this question. We have a lot of electricity from solar in summer, especially in Switzerland. But in winter, yes, November, December, January, it's difficult with the sun, at least in the valleys. We can talk about the Alps separately later. But if you naturally also provide that warmth, then that, of course, creates a fantastic balance that you can achieve.
It's a very sensible diversification within our portfolio, and that feels good because uncertainty in business is naturally already growing. Even in regulated sectors, things aren't simply stable for us, and therefore we as EBL, as a company, also need a reasonably diversified portfolio, where sometimes one division performs well while another doesn't do so well. And then there are times again when the situation looks different. So I believe we are well positioned with what we do.
Yes, the balance. But from the customer's perspective, it's actually good, because not everyone believes that heat pumps and doing everything with electricity is the only blessed path to salvation. And if you can then say, yes, with us, you can have it this way or that way, we'll gladly supply you with heat too, then that really disarms the arguments, don't you think? Or how do you see that?
Yes, but that only applies to a very small number of customers. So if we consider that we distribute electricity nationwide, district heating networks can truly only be constructed and operated where there is a very high heat density or demand density, specifically in city centers. A district heating network is not suitable for supplying a single family home neighborhood. There, district heating with these existing pipelines simply isn't cost effective when compared to a heat pump. So what this means is we can only really offer this alternative in those areas where we can economically develop and densify heat networks. But that, in comparison to the overall electricity supply, represents a very, very small proportion.
Yes, electricity can be delivered anywhere, but with heat pipes, you can only reach where consumers are situated very close together.
And where there are significant consumption demands. Or consider a single family house, perhaps built to modern specifications. It requires so little heating and hot water energy that it's simply much more cost effective with a heat pump rather than having to lay dozens of meters of pipelines to the property.
But you've probably no certainly given the better answer. Because now, from the perspective of a consumer who asks this question, you can also tell them, look, we don't have a problem in winter because where a lot of heat is needed, we have that heat available. That then relieves the strain on our power grid.
Yes, that is certainly the case, yes. However, the proportion that is the electric heating supply will naturally grow very significantly in the future. So this entire development, moving away from fossil heating systems like oil or gas towards predominantly heat pumps, will of course cause electricity demand, especially during winter, to increase quite substantially. And that of course relates to what you mentioned earlier. We will, at least here in Switzerland, certainly face the challenge in the future that we'll have an overabundance of electricity on summer days and actually a winter deficit, or rather a significant gap in electricity production. Yes, the summer day problem, I believe it can be quite well solved with batteries. Batteries are very capable of transferring the electricity that's overproduced during the day into the night. But a battery is, of course, completely unsuitable for transferring power from summer to winter. That will not pay off. And besides, we still don't really have truly good storage solutions today that allow us to cost effectively transfer summer energy into winter, specifically within the electricity sector. This is going to be one of the major challenges. So I'd say covering the summer period primarily with solar electricity and batteries, that will, I believe, be quite achievable. We still need to think about backup systems, though. In winter, it will be a greater challenge. Then Switzerland will have to ask itself the question, I believe, at the end of the day, what do we want? Do we want to expand wind energy more because that produces a larger share in the winter half year? Or what is the next alternative? These are gas power plants, and we must be honest then. So either we have wind turbines on the mountains or on the Jura Heights where there is wind, not excessively like in northern Germany, for example, or we will have gas power plants or some other alternative that perhaps doesn't even exist yet.
Yes, well, innovation is always moving forward. And if we had this very conversation 20 years ago, then
we would have said that PV would never be market ready and batteries, forget it. And that's why I say it's so difficult to plan. And that's also why I say none of us knows what the real driving force behind our energy supply will be in 10 years. Therefore, we simply need sound diversification economically, technologically. And one really shouldn't just fundamentally dismiss any single option and claim that only this specific technology is the sole solution, because that simply won't be the reality. We're seeing this with solar power right now. Its expansion is enormous across Europe. It has a massive impact on electricity prices. So yeah, you'll notice it when you feed your PV power back into the grid. This is, the monetary value per kilowatt hour will decrease. Batteries will somewhat smoothen this because they absorb the energy throughout the day. They then shift it to the night when we have too little. But we simply cannot continue to expand our photovoltaic capacity indefinitely. That is no longer economically viable at some point, nor is it technically justifiable. So we need to utilize every single possibility for energy storage and production that we currently have at our disposal.
When you're talking about diversification, the subject of regional diversification, extending beyond Switzerland as well, that certainly plays a very important role there too.
Well, I absolutely believe that the better the networking across regions and nations becomes, for example, with power line capacities, the better we can manage volatilities. The more energy that can be transported, the better this balancing can occur, in addition to storage technologies. So these investments in cross-border but also domestic transmission capacities, they are truly worth their weight in gold, you know?
Yes, and they probably also contribute to making the network more resilient overall. So we do have risks that we'd prefer to dismiss, but they are still present. And the stronger the network is, the more capable it will be of surviving, for example, if there's an accident or an attack or something like that.
Exactly. Or just like, for instance, a few years ago in France, where systematically the nuclear power plants, which had been constructed in a similar way, encountered a problem and all of them had to be powered down to 50% of their total capacity, meaning the entire French nuclear power plant fleet. At that time, France was truly in a difficult situation and could be supported by other countries thanks to its border capacities, right? Now we're seeing a different situation again. France's nuclear power plants are producing with high availability and utilization and are supplying a lot of energy to Germany this winter, for example, because there was less wind there this year than in other years, right? And I believe you can simply increase security in Europe. Europe has the largest power grid worldwide, you know, by making these connections tighter and tighter. And that will be important since the production we will have in the future will be more stochastic. Photovoltaics is less predictable and wind is also less predictable than, for example, a coal power plant. And this flexibility or volatility must be compensated for by storage, by alternative production that can be ramped up, or indeed by cross-regional networking.
Yes, and when it comes to storage, which we haven't discussed yet, the vehicle is also a topic of conversation.
Yes, I'm not personally that deeply involved in this. Logically, we'll have millions of cars and other vehicles with batteries, 60, 70, 80 kilowatt hours, essentially, in their tanks. And logically, if you can tap into these, you have additional storage available that you can use. And that also happens currently. I think the challenge is still a bit that A, not all vehicles can charge and discharge bidirectionally. And B, the charging stations are still rather more expensive than just the normal ones where you draw from the grid. But I think this problem will also resolve itself over time, and these storage units will be integrated into the system, and that will then again be a task for either an energy provider or another player in the market to aggregate these small-scale storage units, so to speak, and then market them in a grid-serving or supply-serving way. And that is also happening.
Yes, we also factor in the commuting when we conduct CO2 footprint analysis for companies. I believe there's also a significant opportunity for employers. Most people are living in rented accommodation. Only a small number of them have their own solar panels and their own house. And then the question arises, how do tenants manage that? And an answer that recently occurred to me is, well, the employer. It also has roofs, of course. He's also dependent on having that, perhaps especially in critical incident situations, to have energy available. So, if employees park their bidirectional cars there and they are connected, then on the one hand, employees get cheap electricity, and on the other, the employer achieves a certain risk leveling. That was a new thought because I always wondered, oh, how do tenants manage that?
Yes, it is a problem.
Charging stations for rental apartments are being built slowly and are expensive.
Well, that makes absolute sense. Especially the tenants who drive to work by car, they are then throughout the day, when there's usually a lot of electricity, meaning photovoltaic feed-in, they are at their employer site and they can charge there. So that means that makes a lot of sense, and I would actually recommend to all employers to think about how they might upgrade their own parkings, but whether to already equip them with charging stations that are indeed bidirectional and then manage that themselves somehow, I'm not sure if I would recommend that. I believe that that will come, and then providers will emerge who can really offer that very well and affordably. But yes, tenants ideally charge at their employers, because if they're at home, they might perhaps have an underground parking garage. Often one has the problem there that the owner doesn't have a great interest in doing anything in that respect. So perhaps then by law somewhere at some point, there's a need for a few guardrails so that something actually happens. In Germany, for example, that has already happened, right? Well, and then for those who naturally park their vehicles out on the street, it becomes even more difficult. So the employer is certainly a location where one should make this available very conveniently.
We have actually covered a significant portion of the topics, Tobias, and I believe one conclusion emerges. We cannot fully plan the future. We must start doing things and trying them out while minimizing risk. But we must not rule out anything at all, because from what we might have excluded, something entirely different could have developed. And we see that happening time and again, that completely different things arise than what we had initially expected. I truly believe this aligns perfectly with Michael's Green World, because, you know, we always say in our podcast that we must rely on innovation as one of humanity's most underestimated qualities, and yes, EBL is certainly an innovative power provider. I also work with EBL, and regarding my power grid, I live 800 meters from the village, and the situation, being technically very interesting, we found good solutions together. So I personally experience EBL as extraordinarily innovative, and I believe that's the core of the matter. You always have to keep going.
I believe that if you stop moving, you're going to be left behind.
That's absolutely right. Yes, that was a truly wonderful closing statement. My sincere thanks to you, Tobias. Goodbye for now.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Michael.